The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. It is now 3:07 and will end at 4:07. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians are paying 2% more in the HST. They're paying more on 1,400 user fees across this province, Mr. Speaker. The Premier and the government has downloaded $50 million to the municipalities, which will end up on the tax roll of every Nova Scotian when it comes to their property tax, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, considering the fact that at every turn Nova Scotians are sending more money to your government, why did you back away from the commitment to scrap bracket creep?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, everything in the preamble, of course, is not true. But that's usual. And, Mr. Speaker, we didn't make any commitment with respect to bracket creep. But what we did do, Mr. Speaker, is we ensured that hardworking Nova Scotians got a tax break on their income tax by increasing the personal exemption.
The Honourable Official Leader of the Opposition on your first supplementary.
Speaker, I can't believe I just heard the Premier stand up to deny that he increased the HST by 2%, that he increased 1,400 user fees across the province. Mr. Speaker, that's your actions. That's what you did. The preamble was accurate. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair, an average Nova Scotian with an income of $40,000 will be paying an additional $600 under this government, Mr. Speaker, because of the very simple reason they did not keep their commitment to end bracket creep. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier admit that Nova Scotians will be paying more tax because of his government's inaction?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, in fact, Mr. Speaker, what he has just said is completely inaccurate. Like most of the other thing he says, if you have the same income this year that you had last year, you will pay less tax.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, a Nova Scotian who earns $40,000 will be paying an additional $600 because of bracket creep, Mr. Speaker. The fact, Mr. Speaker, that they've increased the basic personal exemption by $250, which we agree with, Mr. Speaker, that leaves a $350 bill that taxpayer owes to the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, can the Premier tell this House why he continues to deny the fact that his government has increased the taxes of every Nova Scotian?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I suggest that the Leader of the Opposition get some better research, because what he's saying is just inaccurate. If you had the same salary this year that you had last year, you will be better off because of the increase in the personal exemption.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. In question period yesterday, Mr. Speaker, one of the Premier's ministers, the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations, in discussing signed agreements between the Government of Nova Scotia and other entities, said that the province signed, and I quote, an MOU, not an IOU. And I have answered here to that effect, but I'm sure it's not necessary, because I suspect that I know the members on the government side like the quote and probably remember it and don't need me to verify it. Having said that, Mr. Speaker, that to us displays a very cavalier attitude on the part of the government towards signed agreements that it enters into with other levels of government, indeed companies and countries around the world. The Premier himself signs MOUs on behalf of the government of Nova Scotia and has, in recent times, signed MOUs with places like Vietnam, Halifax Regional Municipality, Daewoo, the government of Canada, and his Atlantic Canada peers. And
question.
I do have copies of all those here, and I'm happy to
question,
table them,
please.
Mr. Speaker. And so my question to the Premier is this. Does the Premier share his minister's cavalier attitude towards signed agreements by the province of Nova Scotia? And if so, what does that say to those countries and provinces and countries about the word of his government?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I did hear what the minister had to say. I think he was responding because of the insistence of members opposite to understand what actually happens with the MOU. And in fact, the MOU specifically provides for the action that was taken by the minister in exactly the form in which he took the action, Mr. Speaker. It does not download a single solitary penny into any municipality. In fact, it simply confirms the arrangement that was made.
Honourable the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that is simply not correct. The result of the minister's actions are that municipalities are going to be facing much higher costs in future years, starting next year, than they pay today for those services. Mr. Speaker, secondly, although an MOU, like any agreement, has an out clause, it is disrespectful of your counterparty to drag them in on an hour's notice and tell them that you're breaking the agreement. That is the action of this minister and this government, Mr. Speaker. That is why people are so upset. And so my question, my first supplementary, which I'll actually direct to the minister so he can speak for himself, is this. Well, they can choose who they want to answer it, Mr. Speaker. I'd be more than happy to have the
question,
Premier answer
please.
For the minister, as he does so often
question.
Anyway. My question is this. There are other MOUs with municipal governments that this government has signed. One on senior-friendly communities, another on climate change. And so my question to whoever wishes to answer it on that side of the House is, once burned, twice shy, what other municipal MOUs are you planning to break? You decide.
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, first of all, almost everything that member said is incorrect as well. In fact, not giving them an hour notice with respect to the MOU. In fact, what the minister actually did was give them 1 year's notice of the change that was going to take place with respect to further uploading of municipal costs into the province. And we simply said to the municipalities that we are no longer in a position to take more of your cost base. We're not asking you to take anything from the province, but we can't take any more of your cost base, Mr. Speaker. That's a perfectly understandable thing. It is what is provided for in the memorandum, Mr. Speaker. So the minister is actually living up to the terms of the memorandum, as we would expect our partners to do in their memorandums of understanding, as we do.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure that our municipal units will be interested to know that their Premier believes that social housing, that education, that corrections are actually municipal costs and properly funded out of property taxes. That is something that they will be very, very interested to know, because it flies in the face of hundreds of years of practice by this province and indeed by all provinces in Canada. And so my question to the Premier, my final supplementary, is this. Which agreements can municipalities now rely on that are signed by his government, and which ones can they not?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, they can rely on the memorandum just as they do, and they can because the minister demonstrated his exact adherence to the memorandum that was signed. But I would also point out to the member opposite, he was in the Premier's office for many years, and in all those years, in every case, exactly the same group of services were offered and paid for by the municipalities.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, the Minister has a habit of contradicting himself. On Tuesday, he tried to rationalize one of his many tax hikes but simply got himself confused. From one side of his mouth, he said, the cost of government is going up, but in the very next breath, and out of the other side of his mouth, he said, and I quote, previous government left a considerable mess behind them. This is a measure that was necessary in order to clean up the finances of the province, end of quote. Fees are designed to be cost recovery. However, the minister seems to think they are a source of revenue, yet another tax hike from the nickel and dime party. My question to the minister, will the minister table today in this House the exact cost of all inputs which go into delivering these fees and by how much they increased?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Same question the member asked yesterday, and he's going to get the same answer. All required notices have been filed. The user fee report is available on the Department of Finance website. When government services are being delivered, Mr. Speaker, we have to be realistic about the fact that we need to raise the revenue to pay for them. It comes either from the people who are using the service or from the general tax base. If the Liberal Party is opposed to user fees, I understand that, but then they'll at least have to stand up and admit that they would put it on the general tax base instead.
The Honourable Member for Kings West, on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Finance either doesn't understand this basic question or is he hiding from the people of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, the fee for an environmental assessment went up by $310.39. The hike of over $300 happened late on a Friday afternoon when one government place thought no one was looking. The hike of over $300 happened outside of the legislature and with no debate. Mr. Speaker, that's an extra $300 that no one over on the other side of the House can explain. My question for the Minister of the Environment, what is the exact cost of an environmental assessment? Will the minister detail in every cost that went up to deliver one, and will he table his evidence in the House today?
The Honourable Minister of Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to defer this question to the Minister of Finance.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Every notice required to be filed has been filed. Every report that is required to be posted has been posted, Mr. Speaker. Now, it may be the position of the Liberal Party that all of these costs should be borne by the general tax base. Our view, Mr. Speaker, is that in the long run it is more fair that it be borne by the people who are actually using the service.
The Honourable Member from Kings West on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians do know the difference between a tax and a fee for service. Mr. Speaker, the issue couldn't be more clear to Nova Scotians. Yet again, the nickel and dime party is taking away more of their hard-earned cash. Minister of Finance has been blaming the previous government for his own failures as a minister, but Nova Scotians are tired of the excuses from the nickel and dime party. They are tired of the complaining from the finance minister, and they're tired of the premier's endless tax hikes. The premier has hiked the HST. He has ensured that property taxes across the province go up. He is taking $600 out of the pockets of each working Nova Scotian, and he is making it more expensive to access government. Mr. Speaker, an environmental assessment report today costs $300 more than it did only two weeks ago. My question to the Minister of the Environment, will the minister tell Nova Scotians how a report is $300 more expensive to produce today than it was 2 weeks ago? And will he be able to table whatever evidence he might have in the House today? And I'll pass along a table, a sample of some of the fee increases.
Thank you. The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And again, I want to defer this question. But first, I'd like to just to point out to the members opposite. The members opposite have been, history has shown that they have talked about the environment. This particular government is taking action. We're going to have one of the cleanest and greenest environments in Nova Scotia. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Okay, fine.
He deferred it to him when he first said it, but he made a comment. Order, please. Next question. The Honourable Member for Kings West on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of the Public Service Commission. Mr. Speaker, the NDP government has said that the government will not settle wage negotiations for anything more than 1% increases, yet about half of the agreements signed by public workers have resulted in wage increases of more than 1%. My question to the minister, will the minister explain why he has been misleading Nova Scotians into thinking that all public sector workers are only getting 1% increases to their compensation packages?
The Honourable Minister of Public Service Commission.
You know, Mr. Speaker, that unlike that group, the official opposition, Mr. Speaker, when they were in power and didn't want to negotiate with anybody and chase nurses out of this province, Mr. Speaker, we sit down and collectively bargain with our workers, and we are settling for ones, Mr. Speaker. He can interpret it, or that government, excuse me, can interpret it, that opposition party can interpret it any way they want, but as usual, they're wrong, wrong, wrong.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, compensation is much more than simple wage increases. In fact, it is often the other settlements and contracts which increase the cost of compensating workers. For example, the President of Nova Scotia Government and General Employees Union has been claiming a victory with the Civil Service Master Agreement. Although they have agreed to wage increase of 1%, their compensation package has become more lucrative. If an employee finds that their position has been cut by this government, that employee is guaranteed a position elsewhere in government at no less than 90% of their former salary. Even if this person was making $90,000 and is placed in a position better suited to someone at $45,000, they will still collect $72,000. My question for the Minister of the Public Service Commission, how is guaranteeing employment at 90% salary any sort of fiscal restraint measure?
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, that question is so wrong in so many places, I don't know where to begin. But, Mr. Speaker, when we are doing collective bargaining, there are issues at the table around job security and so on, which apparently eludes this group because they don't want... The opposition do not want to negotiate with anybody. They want to dictate. Well, Mr. Speaker, this government negotiates, they dictate. Nova Scotians are better off with us negotiating than them dictating.
The Honourable Member of King's West on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this NDP government likes to say one thing while they are doing another. While they talk about holding wages to 1%, they are loading up the perks through the back door. Increasing employer contribution to benefits, guaranteeing jobs at 90% of former salaries, increases in vacation pay, reclassifications, and retroactive increases mean that government is simply not doing what they would like to say they are. And all of these things mean increases in compensation, increases for taxpayers. No wonder the NDP have been hiking taxes at an alarming rate. My question to the Minister of the Public Service Commission, what are the true costs of these increases to overall compensation packages and not just wages? And will you table this information in the House?
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Quite simply put, Mr. Speaker, 1%. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, the Nova Scotia road paving industry contains 30 private contractors, 150 companies in total, 7,500 employees across our province by any measure. It is a very competitive industry. But that is apparently not good enough for this government or for this minister, who insists on going ahead despite that amount of private activity with government paving. In only one other province in Canada is this the case, and that is the province of Manitoba. And so my question to the minister is this: does the minister really believe that Nova Scotia operators are not up to the job, or are only private companies in NDP-held provinces at risk?
Honourable the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for that question, because it does give me the opportunity to review the situation, although it's been played out in the media many times. You know, when you look at a competitive bid, you look across this province, and tender after tender is called, and in some situations, one bid is received. In others, two are received. Is that competition? That is not competition. I would like to give across the hall, if the member across the aisle would like to go through this very closely with us, I can point out to them that in certain areas of this province, there is no doubt in the mind of this Minister of Transportation that Nova Scotians were not well served by the so-called competitive bids. I also want to point out there is lots of work, there's lots of tenders called, there will be lots of work for road builders. It's important for members in this House to understand, if we want to get the best bang for our buck, for every cent that we save when it comes to a tender that has not been properly bid on with competition, those dollars will be turned around, because paying less means we'll be paving more.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Minister for the answer. I should point out to the Minister that his department's own presentations, their own business case on this issue, show that only in 5% of tenders did they receive only one bid. That is the size of the problem that they are trying to solve. That is the fact that they are relying on to take over government paving, Mr. Speaker. And so my supplementary question, if the Minister truly believes that this is such a good idea, then why, as a Minister of a government that is so proud to boast their good accomplishments, whatever they may be, did they sneak this one in like they've done other labour law changes like Bill 100 and leave it to industry and others to find out only on the tendering website what their plan really was? Why hide it if it was such a good idea, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I would usually, as I traditionally say, thank the member for the question, but the tone is completely unacceptable. I, as a minister, have had a very good working relationship with the Road Builders Association. The executive director of the Road Builders Association, in fact, Mr. Speaker, is a constituent of mine. We have met with the executive on numerous occasions. I have spoke as an AGM on many occasions to the Road Builders Association. We made it very clear, Mr. Speaker, to the road builders that we were not pleased with the lack of competition, the lack of competition in certain parts of this province. And I've heard from members on that side of the House who've brought to my attention, when these changes are made, they would like to have the opportunity to make sure that they're going to see more asphalt work done in their constituency. I've heard from independent road builders. I've heard from truckers who call me and say, you're doing the right thing. This government is going to treat this fairly. And I must point out to the member opposite, whether it's the Road Builders Association, the Truckers Association, you just watch us. We're going to make sure that we get as much paving, as much asphalt as possible all across this province, not just in the ridings on this sort, where in the past it was the government side that got the dollars. Everyone over there who's met with me, Mr. Speaker, I want them to know they will be treated fairly. They will receive the appropriate treatment because we'll have more dollars, and those dollars will come because we have a more competitive tendering process.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister has provided the answer to the problem.
Yeah, I know.
A more competitive tendering process, that is what we all want. Not government paving, but a more competitive tendering process. If the problem was in tendering, why don't we just improve the tendering? That is the point that our critic and that we have been making all along. Everyone on this side of the House has been making that point all along. So my question to the Minister is this. Given that every other province in Canada, except for the two that have NDP governments, have gotten out of the paving business, only two held by NDP parties are in the paving business, my question to the Minister is this. Are all those other provinces wrong, or does he have a problem with the private industry here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation on Infrastructure Renewal, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank that member for that question this time. I mean it seriously, because I want you to know that when we look at comparisons across this country, whether it's in New Brunswick, across the border, when we look at how some of the work is being done there, Let's make this very clear. I have no problem with the Road Builders Association. There will be lots of work during this paving season in this province, Mr. Speaker. Everyone will be busy. In fact, we've heard from particular companies who are saying the tenders are out so early, we have so much work that we don't really know if we can keep up with it. However, I've heard many times there is lots of competition. Well, if there was lots of competition, how come these payments that we saw, there was a lack of real fair competitive bidding? I want you to know the word is out that in Nova Scotia we're going to do it fairly and we're not going to gouge Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal. And let me start by saying that I didn't realize that the leader of the third party knew less about paving than the Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal, because, of course, New Brunswick, which is a Conservative government, also has government paving. Nonetheless, Mr. Speaker, in November, so he didn't even get that one right.
Order, order, please. Order. The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East has the floor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The NDP government announced its much-anticipated five-year road plan back in the fall, and of course, you know, we congratulated you on that. That's fine. We did. But Mr. Speaker, the minister left out one tiny little detail. And that was it. They were getting into the paving and chip sealing business. One tiny little detail. Government must have known at the time that that plan included reaching into the pockets of all these businesses in Nova Scotia in November, Mr. Speaker, because they announced it early in the new year. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister, why did he not inform Nova Scotians and industry members who are here to support your five-year plan of your secret plan to grow government and get into the private paving business?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. In fact, he makes a very good point, and I thank him for his research. At least that part of the question is correct. Members opposite should be aware of the fact we're talking about the chip seal process. You know, we're not doing this in secret. Well, I've never had a secret meeting with any union representatives on this issue. Come in and look at my day planner, and you'll realize that this was a process that we looked at after I looked at tenders and said, what is wrong with this picture? I sent my deputy minister and the chief engineer away with a project to look very carefully last summer of why these tenders in certain parts of the province are just not fair, whether it's the number of bids or whether the fact is why do some of these tenders cost so much. We reviewed that process. That information was brought to me. As a cabinet minister, I dutifully took it to the Treasury Board. We made sure that we followed proper process. We wanted to make sure we were in no rush, that we were going to look at the issues and we were going to make the correct decision. It was my cabinet colleagues and this caucus that agreed this was something should be done for Nova Scotians. There was no secrecy. There was no hidden policy here. It's just good common sense.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Speaker, let's talk about the Minister's reasons. We were told by the NDP that paving in New Brunswick is less expensive than it is here, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table a document that says that. But we now know from the Minister's staff and industry that the specs are lower than they have in Nova Scotia, and I will table that. There you go. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, we were told by the NDP that they would do it cheaper, but now they admit, and their government admits, they can't do it cheaper than industry, and I will table the government's own PowerPoint presentation on that. Mr. Speaker, it has also been pointed out in admitting that paving prices were higher due to infrastructure spending which the Premier admitted yesterday has contributed to increased expenditures, and I'll table that. Mr. Speaker, here. And take that one
question.
Too. So, Mr. Speaker, if getting into the paving business was such a good economic
question.
Decision, why did the minister feel that it was okay to mislead Nova Scotians about the government and not give the complete
truth
about why it was more expensive?
Order, please. The word misleading in that context is unparliamentary.
I think if you check with the clerk.
No. Hold on a sec now. just hang on a sec here, and I'm going to read it to you. Let's see. Well, no interest of time. I'll add it on the end, sir. Thank you. Let's see. Beauchesne rules that the accusation of deliberate or willful misleading states apparent misleading is unparliamentary. So I would ask the honourable member to retract that.
Please. I'll withdraw that word then. Some other word. Okay, why did the minister feel it was okay to give incomplete information to Nova Scotians about his rationale about why it was more expensive to pave in Nova Scotia and not give the complete story?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation, Infrastructure, Renewal, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for your wise ruling also. You know, we come to this House, we've always, as ministers, with ideas that we believe will make life better for Nova Scotians. And I can tell the member opposite whether that inappropriate terminology was used before or whether secrecy involved is not the way that this particular minister does business. I have confidence in the people that I work with in the Department of Transportation. Those professional engineers that I have the pleasure of working with reviewed this situation. They looked at the dollars. They made the comparisons to other provinces. They gave me the advice. I took that advice through to my colleagues. Based upon their advice and the decision that I recommended, we are going to have a better paving process this season. And I will assure you the reason why those bids are coming in more competitive fashion is because those private operators want to get their share of the work, but they also want to make sure that Nova Scotians look at that business and say they are treating Nova Scotians fairly. There are people across this province who want pavement, they want asphalt, and we are going to deliver that promise.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we're not debating the advice that the minister may or may not receive from his staff. We're debating the rationale that he put forward to the public. And Mr. Speaker, there appears to be one other issue that was left out in the discussion when he gave the rationale. The minister suggested that they would create jobs on local paving crews. However, we've now been told by department officials that the crews associated with and hired by the mobile plants will also be mobile. And that is to say they won't be hired in the areas where government plans to chip seal and pave, but they will travel the province on the taxpayer's dime. The more paving and chip sealing, the more travel costs, according to his own department staff. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister please advise this House why Nova Scotians were not told they will be on the hook for travel and accommodation costs associated with having a mobile crew for a mobile asphalt plant?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. You know, there are two seasons in this province. There's winter, and then there's the paving season. And to misquote in a way, the ex-Alaskan governor, I'm not going to say drill, baby, drill. I'm going to say pave, baby, pave.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, because of the tremendous job he did yesterday, my question through you is going to be again to the Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage. Mr. Speaker, during the release of this government's short on details gaming strategy, the Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage admitted he intended to spend up to $25 million over 5 years to implement the MyPlay system on VLTs. Mr. Speaker, the minister said repeatedly that he was willing to gamble these millions based on promising initial research into the system, even though his own strategy states the overall impact of the MyPlay is not known. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister is, at a time when government should be striving to get the biggest bang for the taxpayers' dollar, and after hearing the Minister of Transportation, Infrastructure, Renewal talking about getting the best bang for the buck, Why is this minister so willing to roll the dice on a system that may not be effective?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for his question because it gives me the opportunity to inform the members of the opposition about some positive initiatives in the gaming strategy that we just released, Mr. Speaker. The MyPlay system is a world-first responsible gaming tool, Mr. Speaker, developed by Nova Scotia company. But what most importantly, Mr. Speaker, is a Cape Breton company, Mr. Speaker. So this strategy will introduce a MyPlay system to be enrolled fully by April of 2012, Mr. Speaker, and that will give some time for the retailers, for the players to understand the system, Mr. Speaker, and I think this initiative will have a very positive effect to those individuals who take up gaming here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'll table a letter to the editor that was published in this morning's Chronicle Herald. Terry Fulmer writes, any rationale for spending $4 million per year on the implementation of a compulsory plastic card system is totally destroyed by watering it down with a two-card system, with an optional player-like card tied to no personal data. MyPlay could have provided accurate and useful data on plays and revenues. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister, we know that 2005's A Better Balance, Nova Scotia's first gaming strategy, resulted in less gambling because gaming revenues went down by 22% after its release. So my question, Mr. Speaker, is what goal, in terms of decreased gaming revenues, has the minister set for this vague new strategy?
The Honourable Minister, Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The most important goal when we released this strategy and when we were looking at it was the health and well-being of Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. And I believe this strategy, after wide consultation, Mr. Speaker, takes into account the concerns and issues that stakeholders, that individuals and groups in Nova Scotia who took time to take part in the consultation, I believe that the strategy will address their issues, Mr. Speaker. This is a measured and balanced approach to gaming in Nova Scotia, and I believe supporting a Nova Scotia, a Cape Breton company, is a very positive thing, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When the Minister released his flimsy gaming strategy, Nova Scotians saw once again this government's priority is not providing better service for Nova Scotians. In the strategy, the minister chose to fold the arm's-length Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation into the Ministry of Communities, Culture and Heritage. The minister said streamlining the conduct and management process of government was one of the strategy's greatest strengths. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister, if it is one of the strategy's greatest strengths, can he explain how shuffling the deck is going to benefit problem gamblers? And why is he focusing on the inner workings of government rather than focusing on helping problem gamblers?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Mr. Speaker, governance around gaming in Nova Scotia was just one aspect of the gaming strategy that we looked at, Mr. Speaker, and that's why we addressed the governance of gaming here in Nova Scotia. What we're going to do, Mr. Speaker, at the time when the Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation was created, we agreed, I agree, and the government agreed that was necessary. But we no longer feel that we need a crown corporation to oversee the gaming initiatives here in Nova Scotia. That's why we're going to create and transition into a division of gaming within my department, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's a positive move, and I think it's the right move, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question's for the Premier. And as we've learned recently, after 20 years, the province of Nova Scotia is getting back into the paving business. And this despite the fact that the departmental staff, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, even the minister, have agreed that, yes, the industry could do it cheaper. There's been some problems with tenders, but they could. So we now know that with the reduction in tender opportunities that will occur for private companies, there'll be fewer jobs in the private paving industry and increases in bid prices for tendered work because the economic efficiencies will be lost. So, Mr. Speaker, would the Premier please tell me why his government thinks having the government get into a new business is a good idea when even his own staff admit it'll probably be more expensive than what the private sector could do it for.
Honorable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, that's not true. None of it's true. In fact, exactly the opposite is true. The reality is that we will be able to get more bang for the paving buck. It means that the same amount of money will be available for paving, but we will get more kilometres of paving and chip sealing out of it, Mr. Speaker, which is better for the people of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I recommend that the Premier have the same briefing from department staff that our caucus had, where it was confirmed that they said, yes, the industry could do it cheaper. And, Mr. Speaker, the issue was the Premier's answer might actually mean something if the government had met with industry and told them the government would get into the paving business if prices did not come down. Municipalities in Nova Scotia had the same problem a couple of years ago, met with the paving companies to address the issue, and prices did come down. Departmental staff admit government did not even have this conversation with industry. So, Mr. Speaker, will the Premier please tell us why his government has disrespected the hardworking Nova Scotians in the paving industry and did not discuss their concerns with them before reaching this decision?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we very much respect our partners in the paving industry, and in fact, they will bid for countless millions of dollars in paving this year. Mr. Speaker, the simple fact of the matter is that because of the initiative taken by the Minister for Transportation Infrastructure Renewal, the people of Nova Scotia will see more kilometres of paving with the same amount of money. We will pay less, we will pave more.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier didn't answer the question. He chose not to consult the industry in advance, but he had no problem with consulting with the highway workers, and I'll table this document. So it just seems the consultation only goes to one side of that issue. Mr. Speaker, the Premier is asking us to trust him that this will cost less, yet the department says it will not be reviewing this for 5 years, long after the NDP are out of government and they won't have to take responsibility for the mess they leave. Mr. Speaker, the Premier is asking us to trust him just like he asked us to trust him on a budget that had a two-thirds of a billion-dollar mistake. That's a hard sell. The NDP plan is a gamble, so much so that maybe it should have been included in the gambling strategy a couple of weeks ago. So, Mr. Speaker, my question, given that the information coming from him, from his ministers, from his department staff, and from industry, all seems to be in conflict and changing all the time, will the Premier agree to put this plan on hold and have an independent value audit done before proceeding?
Yes. Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. The reality is that this is a well-thought-out program. It's going to result in a great benefit for the people of Nova Scotia. It's going to mean that for the same amount of money, they're going to get more paving. And when the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal gets the opportunity to review this in 5 years, I'm sure he'll be able to deliver the information to the member opposite if he can find them.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question to you is to the Minister of Rural and Economic Development and Tourism. This government's decision to stop funding the Yarmouth Ferry has had a devastating effect on not only Yarmouth, but the entire Southwest region. Yet this government has yet to admit its decision has played a fundamental role in loss of jobs and business. In fact, the Premier himself said to the media outside this house that, and I quote, "The cause of the economic difficulty in Yarmouth is not the loss of the ferry. The ferry had very little impact, in fact, in that end of the province," end quote. So my question to you, to the minister, does the minister stand behind the Premier's claim that the loss of the Yarmouth ferry had very little impact on Southwest Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I do stand behind is that the tourists visiting Nova Scotia coming from the U.S. using the ferry had decreased by 71%, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I do stand behind is that between 2006 to 2009, that the government of Nova Scotia had spent over $21 million, Mr. Speaker, in the Yarmouth Ferry. What I do find... What I do stand behind, Mr. Speaker, is that there wasn't a solid business case for continuation of the subsidy that this government was providing to the cat ferry, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Yarmouth County Protestants Ministerial recently raised their concerns with the Premier about the economic and socioeconomic consequences of the loss of the Yarmouth Ferry. In that letter to the Premier, which I will table, I have it right here, they say that as pastors representing these communities, we are often the first point of contact for people needing assistance as the direct result of decisions that was made. The letter also states that even the Department of Community Services is referring people to go to the church for help. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Rural and Economic Development and Tourism is, how does the Minister explain the increased demand for assistance with food, home heat, rent, and medications as described by the local clergy since the loss of the Yarmouth Ferry?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Apology accepted. Mr. Speaker, without a doubt, I mean, things have been somewhat, I would say, maybe soft in Yarmouth. Through the Jobs Here Initiative, our goal is to grow the economy and create good, solid jobs in every region of the province, Mr. Speaker. We've made, Mr. Speaker, some huge investments in Southwest Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, during the late debate last night, I mentioned the $400,000 in the Explore Your Shores campaign. I mentioned about the $150,000 that the Premier acknowledged and invested in the 250th anniversary, celebrating Yarmouth's 250th anniversary. Mr. Speaker, we are making an honest effort, as we are in every region of the province, to grow the economy and create good, solid jobs for all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Outside this House, the Premier says the loss of the ferry has very little impact on Yarmouth. Yet local pastors are writing to his office to tell him firsthand that increased demand to provide basic needs such as food has been placed upon them since the loss of the ferry. Can I stop for a second while he answers that, really? Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question to you, to the Minister of Rural and Economic Development and Tourism, is who has it right? The Premier, who claims the loss of the ferry had a very little impact, or the local pastors who are feeding the families of Yarmouth?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has it right. And what we are concentrating on here, we are concentrating on positives. And what we would like is for all members of the House is to work with us as we implement jobs here, create a better economy and more jobs for Nova Scotians here in the province, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is basically about a business case. There was a lack of a solid business case for the cat ferry. Mr. Speaker, that was reaffirmed. I happened to read yesterday and today Nova Scotia Business Journal, which reaffirmed our belief that there was no business case for the cat ferry, and it just didn't make business sense.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia cannot afford this NDP government. Like the rest of Cabinet, this minister takes the easy way out. His decision to break the MOU with municipality will cost property tax owners $3.2 million in Cape Breton Regional Municipality alone. My question is, when did the minister decide the tax increases, layoffs, and cuts were a good thing?
The Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Mr. Speaker,
Oh, no.
The member opposite, being a former municipal councillor, should have some idea of the relationship between the province and the municipalities. I would think that if he read the MOU, that he would recognize there was a clause that the previous administration had put in that clause that based on appropriations. The actions of this government, Mr. Speaker, which gives a time, a very good timeline for municipalities to adjust to this if they need to, and the municipalities are actually going to be better off with a $3.5 million reduction in corrections costs that they would have had to bear prior to the MOU, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Preston on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the minister knows he is misleading Nova Scotians when he talks about his broken promise to municipalities. He keeps getting his ups and downs wrong. He is downloading the municipalities and he's up forcing property taxes up. And when he turns his back on the people of Nova Scotia, my question is, how can the minister say he's not increasing taxes when he's forcing municipalities into this position?
The Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Well, I have to say, Mr. Speaker, I'm starting to see a theme to the member's questions since he's been asking the same ones in three question periods. There's only one taxpayer, which I hope he can recognize. This government, Mr. Speaker, is not increasing any taxes on municipal taxpayers.
The Honourable Member for Preston on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the MOU talks about financial hardship in the province. Yet this province takes more and more money from Nova Scotians every day. They hiked HST 2%. They hiked 1,400 user fees. They're taking $600 from the hands of every working Nova Scotian. They're taxing us so much that we're able to turn a $200 million deficit into a $400 million surplus. My question is, after bringing in two-thirds of $1 billion in extra money last year, how can the minister think that downloading the backs of Nova Scotians is fair?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Well, the question, Mr. Speaker, is a question of responsible. The municipalities have been budgeting these costs over the past many years. This adjustment in the MOU will have no impact on their taxpayers.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you to the Minister of Education. In the Minister's response yesterday regarding the elimination of reading recovery, she told this House that it had been a budget item and a budget decision. The price tag on reading recovery at that time was $7 million. Economists have said repeatedly that education should be the last place to cut in tough economic times. So my question to the Minister is this. Why would a Minister of Education, who I know values public education, ever have the elimination of a valuable literacy program like Reading Recovery on the table as a budget item, and more importantly, ever allow it to become a budget-cutting decision?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. This provides an opportunity to provide a much more service to our students from primary onwards, and so therefore the elimination of reading recovery is going to be better value for our dollar because more students will be served.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your first supplementary.
Thank you. Also in question period yesterday, in response to a question, the minister responded that she had consulted with experts regarding this decision, but she failed to identify the experts. So my question to the minister is this. Will the minister please identify the experts with whom she consulted and when those consultations were held?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I made a decision and I stand by this decision because it is good for the taxpayers of Nova Scotia and for the students as we rebalance our system that our money that we're asking balances out with our decreasing enrollment. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North, North on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm a bit concerned because that's conflicting with the information she gave yesterday, her response that she consulted with experts. She's now saying that she made the decision, so I'd ask for some clarification. At the Public Accounts Committee, Mr. Speaker, on March 9th, the Deputy Minister of Education was reported to have said that one of the reasons for eliminating reader recovery was to address budget restrictions, and I will table that. With the price tag for reading recovery being $7 million at the time and the replacement program being $5 million, my question to the minister is this. Is the minister really telling Nova Scotia parents, teachers, and struggling young readers that losing the opportunity to learn to read at an early age through a research and evidence-based program is worth $2 million in a $1.1 billion budget to this government?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This minister is saying that the children of this province will be able to get support earlier in primary and to be carried through when they need support. We are making sure that we are meeting the needs of our children sooner. So this minister is not taking away. This minister is adding to.
The Honourable Member for Inverness. Order, order, please. Order. The Honourable Member for Inverness has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a lot of Nova Scotians were left scratching their heads this week when the government posted an actual surplus for the previous fiscal year. This fiscal year just ended. Their numbers were out by about $600 million. So, Mr. Speaker, the deficit of this province, we believe, was more closer to 3%. And, Mr. Speaker, to put that into context, when Dr. John Hamm was Premier of this province in 1999, the deficit formed 10% of the operating budget for this province. So to put it into context, in 3 years, that deficit was eliminated by good, prudent fiscal management. Will the minister not agree that last year's budget could have been balanced through modest fiscal restraint?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me inform the House of a few facts, Mr. Speaker, when we're talking about things like debt. Mr. Speaker, the largest accumulation of debt in this province was during a four-year period shared between Conservatives and Liberals, where the debt went up $4 billion in 4 years. Mr. Speaker, the largest two-year increase was $2.3 billion under the Conservatives, and the competition came from the Liberals, who had a two-year increase of another $2 billion. But, Mr. Speaker, the record in Nova Scotia for the largest increase in debt in a single year, $1.473 billion in a single year, belongs to the Conservatives.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your first supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I for one am tired of the whining and complaining that this minister does. And I'm going to give you one example, Mr. Speaker, where this minister could have done something last year. And his government had promised that they would reduce the size of the civil service by 1,000 positions. And we learned from public accounts a couple of weeks ago that about 600 positions people leave every year on their own accord, and nobody is hurt by any loss of employment. So this government, will the minister agree that his government, had they kept to their word, could have eliminated 250 positions, one quarter of that goal, last year, and saved the province approximately $25 million if you look at the cost of the salary, the benefits, the technology, and, Mr. Speaker, the office space? At $100,000 per employee, 250 employees, that would have been a savings of $25 million, Mr. Speaker. And that, curiously enough, would have been probably enough to give Nova Scotians a break on their personal income tax. So will the minister not agree that my numbers could help him, if he had a fiscal restraint bone in his body, to bring our budget closer to being balanced, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I had a very nice family dinner in a Chinese restaurant last night in the riding of the member for Bedford Butch Cove, and I was stunned by the fortune that came out of my fortune cookie. It says, quote, you have balance.
Order, please. No props in the legislature, please. Order, please. You want to? All right, you can table it then. Thank you.
It's a document I intended to table. It says, you have balance and foresight, and you can envision the ideal direction that events should take, end of quote. And I asked myself, Mr. Speaker, how do they know? Mr. Speaker, here's the reality of Nova Scotia's finances. In the last 35 years, that party over there has been entrusted with government twice, and each time they have left nothing but financial wreckage behind.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I think that when our finance minister is starting to read fortune cookies and bringing the results into the legislature, maybe it's time for another finance minister. But Mr. Speaker, I do take exception to his comments. The Auditor General in this province agreed that the Conservatives brought 8 balanced budgets from 99 right through 2009. And they eliminated a deficit that was 10% of the budget in 3 years. And Mr. Speaker, this government should do the same. I would ask a question here, Mr. Speaker, but I believe we're running out of time.
No.
I have time.
You'll have time.
Will the minister not agree that the HST increase last year was not necessary because he ran, after all, a surplus last year?
The Honourable Member, Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, when that government left office, they left wreckage behind, and it was left for us to pick up the pieces, Mr. Speaker. And in consultation with the people of the province, Mr. Speaker, we developed a good plan, a back-to-balance plan. We will be back-to-balance in 2013, Mr. Speaker. We will continue to provide quality public services to the people of Nova Scotia, Mr. People. That is what they asked us to do, and that is what we will deliver.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove. Time has elapsed for oral questions by member.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the Legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.